Sketches New and Old, Part 6. The Undertaker's Chat. "Now that corpse," said the Undertaker, patting the folded hands of deceased approvingly, "was a brick every way you took him. He was a brick. He was so real accommodating, and so modest-like and simple in his last moments. Friends wanted metallic burial case, nothing else would do. I couldn't get it. There weren't going to be time, anybody could see that." Corpse said never mind, shake him up some kind of a box he could stretch out and comfortable, he weren't particular about the general style of it. Said he went more on room than style, anyway in a last final container. Friends wanted a silver door plate on the coffin, signifying who he was and where he was from. Now you know a fellow couldn't roust out such a gaily thing as that in a little country town like this. What did Corpse say? Corpse said, whitewash his old canoe and daub his address and general destination onto it with a blacking brush and a stencil plate, along with a verse from some likely him or other, and pine him for the tomb, and mark him C.O.D., and just let him flicker. He weren't distressed any more than you be, on the contrary, just as C.A.M. and collected as a hearse horse, said he judged that where he was going to a body would find it considerable better to attract attention by a picturesque moral character than a natty burial case with a swell door plate on it. Splendid man, he was. I'd rather do for a corpse like that in any I've tackled in 7 year. There's some satisfaction in burying a man like that. You feel that what you're doing is appreciated. Lord bless you, so's he got planted before he spiled, he was perfectly satisfied, said his relations meant well, perfectly well, but all them preparations was bound to delay the thing more or less, and he didn't wish to be kept laying around. You never see such a clear head as what he had, and so's he A.M. and so cool. Just a hunk of brains, that is what he was. Perfectly awful. It was a ripping distance from one end of that man's head to t'other. Often and over again he's had brain fever a-raging in one place, and the rest of the pile didn't know anything about it, didn't affect it any more than an engine insurrection in Arizona affects the Atlantic states. Well, the relations they wanted a big funeral, but Corpse said he was down on flummery, didn't want any procession, fill the hearse full of mourners, and get out a stern line and tow him behind. He was the most down on style of any remains I ever struck. A beautiful, simple-minded creature it was what he was, you can depend on that. He was just set on having things the way he wanted them, and he took a solid comfort in laying his little plans. He had me measure him and take a whole raft of directions, then he had the minister stand up behind a long box with a table, cloth over it, to represent the coffin, and read his funeral sermon, saying Anka or, Anka or. At the good places, and making him scratch out every bit of brag about him, and all the highfalutin, and then he made them trot out the choir, so's he could help them pick out the tunes for the occasion, and he got them to sing Pop Goes the Weasel, because he'd always liked that tune when he was downhearted, and solemn music made him sad, and when they sung that with tears in their eyes, because they all loved him, and his relations grieving around, he just laid there as happy as a bug, and trying to beat time and showing all over how much he enjoyed it, and presently he got worked up and excited, and tried to join in, for, mind you, he was pretty proud of his abilities in the sing line, but the first time he opened his mouth and was just going to spread himself his breath took a walk. I never see a man snuffed out so sudden. Ah, it was a great loss, a powerful loss to this poor little one-horse town. Well, I hain't got time to be palavering along here, got to nail him a lit and mosey along with him, and if you'll just give me a lift we'll skate him into the hearse and meander along. Relations bound to have it so, don't pay no attention to dying injunctions, minute a corpse is gone, but, if I had my way, if I didn't respect his last wishes and tow him behind the hearse I'll be cussed. I consider that whatever a corpse wants done for his comfort is little enough matter, and a man hain't got no right to deceive him or take advantage of him, and whatever a corpse trusts me to do I'm a-going to do, you know, even if it's to stuff him and paint him yaller and keep him for a keepsake, you hear me? He cracked his whip and went lumbering away with his ancient ruin of a hearse, and I continued my walk with a valuable lesson learned, that a healthy and wholesome cheerfulness is not necessarily impossible to any occupation. The lesson is likely to be lasting, for it will take many months to obliterate the memory of the remarks and circumstances that impressed it. Concerning chambermaids. Against all chambermaids, of whatsoever age or nationality, I launched the curse of bachelordom. Because they always put the pillows at the opposite end of the bed from the gas burner, so that while you read and smoke before sleeping, as is the ancient and honored custom of bachelors, you have to hold your book aloft, in an uncomfortable position, to keep the light from dazzling your eyes. When they find the pillows removed to the other end of the bed in the morning, they receive not the suggestion in a friendly spirit, but, glorying in their absolute sovereignty, and unpitying your helplessness, they make the bed just as it was originally, and gloat in secret over the pang their tyranny will cause you. Always after that, when they find you have transposed the pillows, they undo your work, and thus defy and seek to embitter the life that God has given you. If they cannot get the light in an inconvenient position any other way, they move the bed. If you pull your trunk out 6 inches from the wall, so that the lid will stay up when you open it, they always shove that trunk back again. They do it on purpose. If you want the spittoon in a certain spot, where it will be handy, they don't, and so they move it. They always put your other boots into inaccessible places. They chiefly enjoy depositing them as far under the bed as the wall will permit. It is because this compels you to get down in an undignified attitude and make wild sweeps for them in the dark with the boot jack, and swear. They always put the matchbox in some other place. They hunt up a new place for it every day, and put up a bottle, or other perishable glass thing, where the box stood before. This is to cause you to break that glass thing, groping in the dark, and get yourself into trouble. They are forever and ever moving the furniture. When you come in the night, you can calculate on finding the bureau where the wardrobe was in the morning. And when you go out in the morning, if you leave the slop bucket by the door and rocking chair by the window, when you come in